And welcome to another episode of Mass Monologues. Today I have with me Mike the Good Kid. He is a rapper artist. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I've been a hip-hop artist for a long time. I've been writing since a kid, recording since probably 13 years old, and just pursuing the dream since then. I left Ohio, which is where I'm from, in 2015, went to New York, ended up in California, and have been here ever since, just trying to make it happen.
Wow, you've been writing for a long time then.
Yes.
Can you
yes.
tell us about what inspired you to write? Was there anyone in your life that encouraged you to write music or to create the songs that you've created?
Yeah, definitely. When I was like 9, my two best friends, for whatever reason, were very big into hip hop and were already writing raps. And to be honest, one of them was very good at a young age. He had this natural talent with drawing and writing, just very well structured, was already using multi-syllabic rhymes and like just already had it figured out somehow at 9 years old. And the other one was his parents were very well educated. So he had a very big vocabulary and they were just like, he was listening to a lot of Wu-Tang and just like they were very advanced for their age. And I was terrible. I had no idea what I was doing. And I was just trying to keep up with them. So that really inspired me to start writing. And we would like print out the lyrics of like rappers we were listening to at the time and kind of study them or write out people's songs just to feel how it felt to write what they were writing. So that's definitely how it started for the first handful of years.
How would you go about creating a rap song? Because I've done songwriting for songs that I've sung before, but I've never thought about approaching it from a rap perspective. How do you think about the meter, the amount of syllables you have? How do you go about approaching all of that?
Yes, in hip hop, there's so many different styles of like inflection and cadences. And there are rappers who have extremely long lines. There are rappers who have extremely short, basic lines. It's like you spend a lot of years trying out different styles and seeing like what you feel comfortable with. For me, I've always been more of a shorter, short meter kind of guy. I know when I started learning about iambic pentameter and things of that nature that it already came naturally just because of I'd already been writing raps for so long that I didn't know what I was doing. But once I learned the technical aspect of it, I started to realize we had already been doing it. And, you know, for me, it was just like, you know, it's a lot of trial and error. It's a lot
got that right.
A lot of kind of copying like your influences in the beginning, seeing the way they write things out, also just seeing other people's styles and what they do. I was online a lot too, like seeing how other people writing. And, but yeah, eventually once you start recording, that starts to make a big difference because then you see what works and you see what doesn't immediately. And freestyling too. Freestyling changes it a lot because you're just going with your gut and you're not really thinking about it. And that will change your style and your approach a lot as well.
Is freestyle nerve-wracking? How do you, I guess you have to become accustomed to knowing all these rhymes, knowing how it fits in to be able to freestyle.
Yeah. So I would say it's nerve-wracking if you're in front of people for sure, especially in the beginning. But it's more about, just like having fun. And for me, I do have like just an endless amount of rhymes like in my head somewhere. So that makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people freestyling will base it off of the rhymes as opposed to like trying to say something. But if you can do both at the same time, then you're like way ahead of most people.
Right. And so, when you go to record or write songs, do you just start off by freestyling or do you have the lyrics written down and then take it from there?
So I would say it's always a little bit differently. It's sometimes I'll have some lyrics, sometimes I'll have all the lyrics, sometimes I'll freestyle. But over the years, it's been more, and this is something a lot of rappers do now, like in the last 5 years, I would say, they'll call it top lining and they'll basically just go in. Yeah, and they'll just do some scat stuff. Like they'll just freestyle a rhythm or a melody and not really say any words. Unless if words come to you while you're doing it, then that's good and helpful. But more focused on the rhythm, the flow, the cadence, the melody, and just laying that down first and seeing what feels good, what feels right. and then just inserting the words the best you can.
And what influences did you have when you first started out rapping, and who do you draw from today?
When I first started, you know, when I was 8, my uncle bought me a Beastie Boys album. So there's Beastie Boys and then also like the Space Jam soundtrack when that first came out. So it was like Method Man and Redman and also DMX and Jay-Z and Eminem. And we would listen to a lot of Kid Rock and Limp Bizkit back then. I'm from a very white town, very small white town. So the influences were all over the place, but That's how it started, and then went through a lot of different phases, like underground rap and gangster rap and super lyrical rap. And today it's more, as cliche as it is, it really is like a Kendrick Lamar, a J. Cole, like Chance the Rapper is big, Tyler the Creator is big. Those guys who are just doing it at such a high level, it's hard not to be looking at what they're doing and be influenced by it.
Yes, and with rap, I've noticed that it's so difficult to try and send a message with your music. Do you have any messages that you've used in your previous songs, or how do you go about telling a story with the rap and still paying attention to the rhymes, the cadences, the rhythm, the structure?
Yeah, I think, in my opinion, I think just the more verses you write, the more you're able to just like passively insert kind of like the skills that you've honed while you're trying to tell a story. So it doesn't so much, it's not so much like you're trying to make it good while you're telling the story. It's just like the skills that you have just come out while you're telling the story. So for me, it's like I have, especially in recent years, tried to put a lot more messaging in my music, and it'll be more like a song, like sometimes, which has done well for me, it's just feeling down and bad and like you want to run away, but at the same time, you know that you'll be okay. People can check in on you and that's nice of them, but for yourself, that you're going to be okay. You're just having one of those days where things don't feel so good. Or a song like New Life, which was basically me being in Ohio, stuck in Ohio, wanting to leave Ohio, knowing that there was like a new life for me to go create, but just that like that being in limbo, like not having done it yet, not having started yet, and just kind of feeling the frustration of not leaving yet. I try to write more personal stories now because they seem to relate. So I just try to like talk about what I've gone through the last 7 or 8 years and just do my best to do it well when I tell that story.
And when you're telling a story with your music, with your rapping, how do you try and how do you know that it will connect with others? Do you think that you have to start from a point you were saying where you relate it back to your past experiences? It has to be personal. Do you find that tends to relate more with others? Or have you ever tried to see what other people are going through and then write a song about what they're going through from their perspective? Would you encourage songwriters to approach their songs from different perspectives, or what has worked well for you?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. I think I definitely want to do a lot more of telling stories through other people's perspective. And a lot of people lately have been encouraging me to do that, and it's been on my mind a lot. I have done it a couple times, but not nearly enough. For me, it's always come from my own personal stories just because that's what I know. And for a long time, I was really just trying to be like a good rapper, like a great rapper, punchlines and rhyme schemes and stuff like that. But as I started to open up more about my own story, I could see like that it did resonate and people were relating to it. So writing has always been a form of like catharsis or venting or a therapy session for me. But I didn't tend to really share those stories when they were really personal. I was kind of, I don't know if people want to hear this, but when I did, I could definitely see the effect it had. And that encouraged me to do it a lot more often. So that is where I'm at now, the last couple of years, where I'm writing a lot of very personal songs. And I love that people relate to it and that it helps connect.
It's very vulnerable. It comes from a place
of
actual hurt or actual feeling, emotion.
Yeah, and I'm like a pretty private person, I would say. So I don't really talk to people about my problems very often. So when I share these stories, it is a little uncomfortable or awkward at first. But the moment that I see people like react to it or connect to it, then I'm like, okay, it's okay. Like, I should do this more often. But I would definitely encourage people to be super honest, super vulnerable with the way they write. I think that's the quickest way to get to good music, because it is emotional and it is all about connecting. Yeah, it's raw. And so the more honest you are, the quicker you're going to get to that place. And also the more original your song is going to be, because nobody has experiences like you. So definitely encouraging people to do that. But also, yeah, writing from other people's perspective is like a great challenge for a writer. Mm-hmm. If you can write a good song from someone else's perspective, then you really took the time to put yourself in their shoes. Mm-hmm. And that's not an easy thing. A lot of people can't do that at all, especially in like real life.
Notice that you do a lot of live performances. Is that correct?
Lately, yeah. The last 9 months, yeah.
And are you ever nervous when doing live performances, or do you love the energy? How is that for you?
So 9 months ago, I was like terrified. So I had like a band, like a jazz hip hop band, like 5 years ago, and we did a lot of shows, but it's so much easier when you have a group of people with you.
Mm-hmm.
And the spotlight is not just on you.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I was like the vocalist, it was still just like, I could point to this guy, have him do a solo. I could take the eyes off him when I wanted to. So for this, it's, I would say the first 4 or 5 times, yeah, I would be like sick to my stomach the whole way leading up to it. And just like in the bathroom, just like very 8 Mile Eminem style, just putting water on my face and like trying not to pass out. And just like, you know, trying to stay focused. Anytime anybody tries to talk to me before a show, it's like, I can't hear anything they're saying. I can't process it. I'm just thinking about like the nerves that are going on. But after 5, 10, 15 times, it gets easier for sure. It's still always a little bit nerve wracking, but you just learn how to deal with the nerves a little bit better.
Yes. It's funny when you're a vocalist and not an instrumentalist, because when you're an instrumentalist, you can point to other people in your band and say, oh, you know what? It was Jim in the back there.
Yeah.
It was somebody else. But when you're the main vocalist, it's, nope, it was me.
Yeah, exactly. You are the fall guy. There's no getting around that. And that is nerve-wracking. But I think once you start to have some good experiences on stage, it's a lot easier to remind yourself that it goes well sometimes and that there's not so much of a reason to be freaking out about, because when you're freaking out, it's always, you're thinking worst case scenario.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm going to forget all my words. I'm going to be sweating.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to throw up in the middle of my, but once you get a couple good ones under your belt, you're like, okay. Yeah. And especially when you think you had a bad performance and you look back and it wasn't that bad, you're like, okay, the way I feel doesn't actually correlate with what other people are seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's big too. It's okay. I look okay up there, even when I'm terrified. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
I can just pretend like I'm not terrified and it'll be okay.
Yes. It's always funny when you're the artist or the vocalist and you always think you've done a lot worse than you actually have.
Yeah.
It happens with live performances or even recording in the music studio. And you think, no, I have to go back and redo that vocalist now, right? And everyone else thinks it's fine. It's great.
Yeah.
No, I have to redo it. Do you go back when you're doing vocal takes and just go back and redo it? Or how many vocal takes does it usually take for you to do to get a song? Because I know with singers, it takes 80, can take up to 80 to 100 takes. Rappers, I don't know what your normal is.
That's a good question. I think, again, it's like it varies from song to song. And it also varies depending on my mood that day. Because like you're saying, yeah, like what you think in your head is not always right as far as how it actually came out. So in my head, I'm thinking like, I have to do it this certain way. I have to put this amount of like emphasis or effort into it for it to turn out good. But then sometimes I'll do a take that's super lazy or casual or not trying at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll end up being the main take.
No, it's funny how when you're just being lazy or you're at ease, if you're relaxed, somehow you get the best takes. And it's been trying for 30 takes to do this perfectly. Yeah. And this was just a fluke.
Yeah. And I think it's because we come up learning how to do things a certain way for it to be good. Right. Mm-hmm. Like I was taught how to deliver, how much emphasis in order for it to come out good. But good is like very different from connecting emotionally, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're being lazy or you're at ease, then that gives off a certain tone, a certain energy. And if that connects better, especially for that specific song, then it just works better. And it's super important to try different approaches for every song just to give it its own unique delivery. I didn't really start doing that until a couple years ago. For me, there are certain songs where, yeah, I'll do the same take 20, 30 times. I don't ever get up into 60, 70, 80. There's probably times where I should have, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can always, you know, it's up to you. It's whenever you feel good with the song. And that's really the thing. You don't want to get too caught up in overanalyzing or like putting a magnifying glass over each take. And because that's how I used to be. I used to make sure everything was exactly perfect. I couldn't say anything any better. Mm-hmm. And that'll get you a good result. But I think to get like a great result, like you said, you have to go back and just try different things and be more relaxed sometimes. And it's music, so it's subjective. So it's really, you can try anything you want.
And also it hinders a bit of your productivity, because if you're spending a week, 2 weeks more than you should on a song, you could be using that to write another song that might be better. Would you say that's a good method, like writing more songs as opposed to trying to perfect the one song that you've done?
Yes, I would. And I would say I'm very guilty of not following that advice over the years until super recently. And that's because I saw people around me just getting away with a lot less effort and still making good music. It's like I would, because for me, writing, it's I'll always write as much as I can. I don't have as much of a problem with that. But when it comes to recording, yeah, I spend way too much time recording, way too much time mixing. When if I could just get it to 75-80% and be good with it, instead of spending an extra 2 weeks on that last 20, then yeah, you get a lot more songs in and you progress a lot faster. And you also learn a lot more. But if you sit there perfecting something, then you're not going to learn anything from it, as opposed to just trying something and taking that risk and seeing what people say, for better or worse. Then you actually learn from it.
Yes, I completely understand. Can you tell me more about your artist profile or how you would define yourself as an artist?
Yeah, so like I had mentioned, for a long time, I was really just trying to be a good rapper. And like, I just wanted people to think, I just wanted like respect from other good rappers. And then around 2020, I was working in politics a lot for the previous handful of years. I worked for the Bernie Sanders campaign. I was like running his door knocking operation in Nevada. And I was like spending 100 hours a week doing politics. And when that all ended, I was like, wow, I don't want to spend this much time on something. I loved the Bernie Sanders campaign, but politics in general, I did not love. And it was like, I was like, okay, let me just reset here. And I was living in Joshua Tree out in the desert. And I was like looking around at what the people around me were doing. And I was like, okay, it's time for me to do something different. And I wanted to write better songs. I wanted to make songs that were more relatable and easier to listen to with more replay value. And I was just trying new things. I was trying a lot of new things. And I was just freestyling a lot more. And through a freestyle is how I started coming up with Mike the Good Kid. And the name is basically, first, it's a play on a lot of my favorite rappers like Tyler the Creator, Chance the Rapper, Chip the Ripper, Silk the Shocker. There's a lot of rappers that have names like that. But Coda the Friend was a big one that pushed me to come up with Mike the Good Kid. But the concept is basically like when I was in Ohio, there was a lot of things going wrong in my 20s. It was like I was partying a lot. A lot of my friends were doing too much bad stuff. There was too many drugs going around. And I started losing a lot of friends. I lost probably a dozen friends to overdoses in like 2013 to 2015. Yeah, it was just a crazy time. Fentanyl started like taking hold and like bad batches would go around and then you just lose people. And I had started getting in trouble, because if you're just partying for years and years, like you're going to start getting in trouble eventually.
Yeah.
And I started losing myself a little bit. And there was one time where I ended up like in jail over the weekend and I was just sitting there. This is not what I'm supposed to be doing. And I wrote myself this long letter, telling myself to get out of Ohio and go do what I know I'm supposed to be doing. And when I left, I really started doing a lot of stuff I didn't expect, getting into politics and volunteering. And I was in Houston after Hurricane Harvey. I was in Standing Rock. I was like in all these places, just like trying to help people out and do good things. And when I started meeting all these people, and this phrase would, it kept coming up. People would just be like, you're a good kid. You're a good kid. You're a good kid. And I didn't feel that way in Ohio.
Yes.
So the name, when it started coming out in these freestyles, and also Good Kid, Mad City by Kendrick Lamar was a huge album for me. But when I started freestyling this name, I was like, okay, this is good because it's like a good, like it, the artist for me, the artist profile, the artist concept.
Almost.
It's like a new beginning. It's also like a reminder of like my younger, more childlike self, right? Like at my core, like I was a good kid, and then you can get taken off your path very easily. You can get distracted, put in the wrong environment, surrounded by the wrong people, and go really far away from who you actually are. But Mike the Good Kid is like a reminder of can do good still, you can be good, and you still have that goodness inside of you. And that's when I started writing more like positive, introspective, feel good. That first couple months there, I came up with Sometimes and Bright Side and Private Vacation and all these songs that I had never made anything like that before. And so I just like the name because it makes me feel good. And it helps me like remember that even if I do go through a dark time again, like I can still come out of it and feel good again. So that's the idea behind it.
No, that's a wonderful story. I love that. With that, I want to wrap up this episode. Are there any social media platforms or website links that people can go check out your music?
Yeah, so Instagram, I'm probably most active on. Spotify, Apple Music, Mike the Good Kid, that's MICTHAGDKID, Mike the Good Kid. I also have a website, mikethegoodkid.com, that I will be updating periodically with just like new projects and stuff like that, merchandise. Right now, there's just an older project on there. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. That was a really good conversation.
Thank you so much for being here. I always love listening to other people's stories.
Yeah, I like that.
If you like this podcast episode, then please share it with a friend or family member. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.